small talk or no small talk? Just straight into.
Oh, we are small talking.
Yeah, we need it. We're small talking it up.
We're gonna small talk. You guys, Mercedes.
Hi.
It is cold season.
It's freezing.
For everybody, right? Yes. I mean, not just Mercedes. Well, cold, but like sickness.
Oh,
too.
Yes. Like a I'm virus. Like, it is freezing. But yeah, sickness.
Ear infection season over here.
Oh, actually, I'm so glad we're going to talk about this. Okay, what are you going to say? Because I have something to share.
Yes. Cold season.
It's cold season.
Mercedes is so excited. Listeners,
she's ready.
I am like, I just want to know.
Say it, Mercedes.
I have something for you to do. Okay, ladies, you're not going to do it, but I want you to do it.
Is it making our own cough syrup out of natural things?
No, it's like that. It's in the same vein. But okay, so I follow this lady who is the Terry Brown vibes of herbs from Australia, and she's wonderful. And so sunflower, yes, all the nasal, post-nasal drip. She's got the cough going, you know, and she'll even cough so much that it kind of makes her like gag or throw up. So I'm like, oh, Lord, it's coming. And I had just so happened to see a post that she put online where you cut onions. You've all heard of this, maybe. And you put it at the bottom of the feet with the sock and they sleep with it.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. I've never heard of this.
It works.
I don't know that it
works. It works.
No. Wait, you cut onions into pieces and you put it in her socks.
So what you do.
And she stopped coughing.
I'm giddy about this because if you guys know, coughing, all night coughing is the worst. And you're like,
the worst.
Sometimes I give her a shower and then it's like a whole to-do. And that really helps her. She's sitting upright. There's humidifier. Yeah, yeah. Onions, you guys. So I've worked with both the white and the red or purple, whatever you think the color is. I think the purplish red color works the best. I do I slice the whole circle and then I cut that in half. I need to do a visual. And then I put it on a paper towel and then I wrap the onions on the bottom of her feet with the paper towel. And then I put a sock on over it. And I do that for both feet and she sleeps with that at night. Yes. Does it smell horrible? Yes, it does. It
smells like BO. Like your 12-year-old was just running around with no deodorant.
But we're all sleeping and she doesn't need her inhaler. Like it's just, she's recovering. You guys, she is recovering. Okay. Try it. I'm just saying you have to try it for 2 nights at least.
Okay.
But it will work.
Don't knock it till you try it.
Don't knock it till you try it. It works.
Yeah. Mercedes, thank you. Dr. Laura, thank you for
oh, I wish I was a natural medicine. I will link you guys. I will send the Instagram post because I saw it on Instagram, so it's real.
It's real. Yeah, totally. So I just want to understand, like, I cannot imagine Ace even keeping his socks on while he sleeps. I mean, I guess
Sunny doesn't have sensory issues.
Okay.
If she knows something helps her.
She's up for it.
Yeah, she's up for it. And she takes it right off when she wakes up. She's like, yes. And then, but she's slept through the night. No coughing.
This is amazing. Okay.
Well, that's magical. Okay. And what, do you have any idea, like, is the juice, the onion juice gets in your skin. And then what happens?
Well, I guess your feet, you know how everything is connected. Thank you. I'm going to butcher everything now because I'm not a doctor. But your foot is directly connected to your lungs. Okay. And so it opens up your lungs more because what's happening too with the like post-nasal drip, especially with pneumonia, you're getting gunk in there, right? There's like it's getting mucusy. And what this is allows you in your lungs, your airways to open it more. I don't know why it does this. this is what the doctor told me to do. And, but I believe it. Cause I believe food is the solution. Okay. To
food. I believe in food as medicine for mm-hmm. sure, but usually, and I'm excited for you for this.
Food is topical and no, really it's food is instrumental topically and ingestively for sure. But yes, onions, bottom of the feet, try it on yourself. If your child will not do it, just to see, does this work? And of course I always have Sunny upright, but it works, you guys. I don't know why it works.
Okay. You know, let's keep her out of the hospital through onions.
I am going to have to say right now that this is exciting and I'm happy for you for this. And we're going to move into our conversation. Enough about this.
About this.
And we're actually not going to mention this to our guest.
Oh, I know.
Who is a doctor, a real doctor. Wait till you hear our guest credentials.
And her thoughts.
But we are going to shout some worth and we are going to shift some narratives for people with Down syndrome. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. We are excited to have a real doctor on. We're also excited to have Mercedes Dr. Lara on, but we're excited to have a real doctor on. Dr. Stephanie Santoro, who's joining us today from Massachusetts General Hospital Down Syndrome Program. Dr. Santoro, a pediatrician and geneticist for real, is here to talk about the importance of research for individuals with Down syndrome. And we're really grateful to have her on today for such an important conversation. So let's get right to it, friends. Welcome everyone to the Lucky Few podcast. Merce, you want to read this little review?
Oh, I do.
How do you feel about that? I want you to do it.
Okay, before we hear from our guests, let's read one of our wonderful, kind reviews. This is from Max0277, and he says, "This is everything a podcast about Down syndrome should be, celebrating success, lamenting challenges, and honest representation of our most precious friends with Down syndrome. Thank you." That's so sweet. I know. I like that. You're the best.
Thanks, Max.
And friends, please don't forget to leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate it and we may read it next week.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much, everybody. This is important before we get on to Dr. Santoro. Everybody listening, guess what is happening on March 8th?
Something special.
In San Diego, California, there is going to be a live event. That is right. Micah, woo! Mercedes, and Heather from the Lucky Few podcast. That's us. We're going to be together in person in San Diego, California. Why, friends? Why are we doing this? Everybody,
because we like you.
We do.
And because we are celebrating the fact that we've had 1 million downloads.
1 million downloads. What are we going to do? Show up on our computers? No.
No, we're not.
We're going to get together in real life.
I need to see your face.
We're going to do a little toast. Yes. There is going to be alcohol at the event,
are
friends.
Are we adults or what?
Oh, boy.
Party. And it's in San Diego and tickets are on sale right now. Okay, listeners, this is going to be worth it to come. Okay, tickets are they're $21. If you can't make it, we're also doing a virtual ticket that you can join us live, or if you need to watch it later because it's going to be on the West Coast, and if you're sleeping at 7 o'clock, then you can watch it the next day and join us the next day or whenever you want. But there's only 40 tickets.
How many?
It is a small, intimate venue. There's 40 seats.
Oh, my gosh.
So hop on that online. Where do you go to buy it?
Run, don't walk.
Run, don't walk. LuckyFewPodcast.com. Hit that link. Get your ticket today. Invite your girlfriend and your neighbor. Date night. However you want to do it. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Woo!
Yeah. And I just want to say to all my East Coasters, I'm flying over there.
That's right.
You should fly too. You should just get a friend. Make it a party. It's going to be in March when it's still winter and cold and terrible. over here on the East Coast. So go have a beautiful, wonderful, sunshiny weekend with us.
In San Diego, y'all. There's not many places better in the United States than San Diego, California. So we'll see you there.
See you there.
All right, friends. We are here with Dr. Stephanie Santoro. Dr. Santoro is a board-certified pediatrician, clinical geneticist, and an assistant in pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. She has focused her career on improving medical care for individuals with Down syndrome through quality improvement techniques and established guidelines. She's a graduate of the University of Cincinnati and the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. She completed a 5-year combined pediatrics medical genetics residency at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. As an attending geneticist in Columbus, Ohio, she helped relaunch the Adult Down Syndrome Clinic at Ohio State University, developed a genetics presence at the Nationwide Children's Hospital Down Syndrome Clinic, and worked with the clinic teams to make improvement to those clinics. At MGH, she provides medical care to individuals with Down syndrome across the lifespan in the MGH Down syndrome program, from prenatal diagnosis through adulthood. She participates in clinical research and is launching quality improvement initiatives. Dr. Santoro has served on the Down Syndrome Associates of Greater Cincinnati's Health Advisory Board, the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio's Governing Board, and founded the Medical Advisory Committee. Dr. Santoro has been invited to speak locally, regionally, and nationally on topics including medical care for Down syndrome, best practices in delivering a diagnosis of Down syndrome, and EHR integration. She conducts research focused on aspects of health and Down syndrome, adherence to the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines, and successful methods to improve adherence. Welcome to the show, Dr. Santoro. And woo!
Yes, I feel like we should clap. Right.
Come on down.
To the stage.
This is amazing.
Well amazing. Done.
That's so fun.
All of a sudden, I'm nervous.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I can just leave now. That was all of it.
That was it. And yep. That's
just
the episode.
Your accolades.
Thank you for coming.
That's so great.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, we are friends. If you wondered, we are talking to an expert today. So this, finally an expert. Just kidding. Past guests. We've had a lot of experts. Finally, not the three of us just deciding what's working or not.
And also the three of us always claiming, okay, and first of all, just remind you guys, we are not experts.
That's right. Now we've got an expert. Okay, Dr. Santoro, I would love to know first to get to know you a little bit, your connection to Down syndrome. Why Down syndrome for you?
Yeah, so I got really interested in genetics when I was a medical student. And then I kind of focused on genetics. And one of the first syndromes, you know, geneticists and folks who are in genetics learn about is Down syndrome. It's really like the most common, typical syndrome that a lot of people think about and learn right away. So I always had known about it and been interested in Down syndrome. And then when I started seeing patients in the genetics clinic, I would ask my attending doctors, you know, where are all the kids with Down syndrome? It's so common. I'd love to, see them in clinic and learn about how you give good medical care to them. And I found out there was a specialty clinic where I was learning, all focused about Down syndrome with lots of disciplines. And I observed in that clinic and I really just kind of fell in love with it, with the patients, the families, the whole multidisciplinary model. So that's kind of how I chose Down syndrome. Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
So you started to, as you started to work with these families affected by Down syndrome, at some point you were inspired to initiate the development of the Down syndrome health instrument. And I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about that and about how you came to this.
Yeah. So it kind of picks up just where I was finishing with the last one, kind of choosing Down syndrome. I learned that there are healthcare guidelines and like very clear recommendations about kind of the basic healthcare that all folks with Down syndrome should receive. And that's from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And now there are newer healthcare guidelines for adults with Down syndrome. So when I was kind of starting in this field, I asked many of my pediatricians that I was working with and learning from as a pediatric resident, you know, are these guidelines followed? Do we know if doctors are actually doing all the right things that they should do? And we found out that there are actually lots of gaps in healthcare and even really common things like getting annual thyroid blood tests. Mm. A lot of times that's not being done, you know, things like that, that are really kind of the basics of care. So after I kind of got interested in thinking about healthcare adherence and how well we follow those guidelines, I was writing a paper, and one of the people reviewing my paper said, it's great that you're, you know, doing all these interventions to improve adherence, but do you know if you're actually making patients healthier by following these guidelines? And so that question really stuck with me, and it got me thinking about what health is, how we measure health, how we think about health. And that kind of has taken me down this path to make a health instrument.
Yes. I've had the same conversations when, so we do, we see our primary doctor and we also see a naturopath. And I've gone that route of like really doing both due diligence because of not fully feeling like with the pediatrician, and what's kind of just like the regular checklist really has to do for Sunflower, who's a whole different person, in which because she has she's genetically different than what I think they're measuring at my pediatrician's office health. And which brings me to this question, why do you believe it is crucial to have a dedicated tool for assessing the health of individuals with Down syndrome?
Yeah, I looked in the kind of literature and tried to find if there are any good tools for kids in general and people in general that I could use. But when we tried to use some of those, we found that there are real gaps or barriers to using them well for, you know, people with Down syndrome. So we did a study in our clinic where we gave out kind of a survey about health and filled it out on paper, and parents completed it. And they would write lots of notes in the margins, like, this question doesn't really apply to my child. This one doesn't really work. You know, this doesn't make sense, things like that. And so some of that data is what led us to think that we really needed to think about health more like comprehensively and try to make this new measure.
Could you give any specific examples, like for like right now it's cold season, right? And like, I mean, I know for our household, this is where we like kind of prepare, like, will Sunny get pneumonia? Will she not? You know, and like I see that also on Instagram, RSV, RSV, we're in the hospital. So there is like, what's it called? There is a commonality when it comes to lungs specifically, you know, heart, like nasal drip. Was there any, like when you're talking about tools, was there anything specifically that you were like, okay, when it comes to RSV or the cold season, this is what we have mainstream, but this is what it kind of needs to look like more for people, for families who have a child with Down syndrome. Does that make sense? Like, was there any kind of example you can give?
Yeah, totally. So the one I'm thinking of that just comes to mind, and there were more, but some would talk about communication and speech and talking to other peers. And many of the families would write, my child happens to be nonverbal. And so this question about their speech just doesn't really apply. They communicate in other ways, perhaps, but like, it's hard to answer this question that isn't really looking at the full spectrum of communication. So that's one that I can think of, but there were many where it was similar, where the questions kind of applied, but not as well as you'd like, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I have some clarifying questions here. So
sure.
With this, I was just talking with a friend who has a son with Down syndrome, and she was saying how, you know, if our kids with Down syndrome, every single cell in their body has this extra mm-hmm. chromosome. And so when it comes to mm-hmm. getting a cold or how they're going, just how their body mm-hmm. functions medically, it's going to be different. And she was saying, and why is that not just common knowledge? Why is that? Why are we not training doctors to know how people with Down syndrome, like, medically
process through things or
appear in the world? Yeah. And why is there research not being done? And would you say that this is the start to that? Like, does that question make sense? Like, is this health instrument you're asking? There's a survey and you're asking parents to and caregivers and people with Down syndrome to answer the questions on the survey. But there's also right. the medical side that I can't attest to because that's not my right. lane. But my kids with Down syndrome, their bodies are just, right. every cell is different, you know? And so is that part of what this health instrument is too?
Yeah, that's a great question with maybe a few different parts. So
yeah.
So the instrument itself, we're trying to measure health and thinking about what makes us all feel healthy, like what a healthy day looks like to all of us. And that has a little bit of a different spin than like thinking of what a doctor might look at when they're looking for like diseases and diagnoses. So we're trying to have a little bit more of a positive side where we're trying to look at what healthy looks like and how to measure that than more of a deficit kind of model. So that's what the idea of the instrument is. And parents or caregivers would fill it out. And we're hoping that it would, you know, be a way to better measure health and track, you know, how health changes over time, or, you know, if there are things that families are really feeling strongly are negatively impacting health, maybe the pediatrician or physician would see that and know to really like jump in and act on that. But to your other question about kind of more medical knowledge and training, I mean, that's always been an issue to train folks about genetic conditions in general. I think the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines and the adult evidence-based care guidelines, those are both helpful ways to try to make sure that there's at least a resource out there for physicians to reference, to know what to screen for. And there's some nice tables like to know what conditions can go along with Down syndrome. But I think part of it is that you have to really start educating folks and training them early in their career before they've, you know, branched off to certain specialties. So trying to get more medical students to learn about Down syndrome as soon as possible. Yeah.
Are you aware of any studies that are happening to get that in place? The learning about it for medical students early on, like the science behind being a person with Down syndrome medically?
I don't know of any studies looking at kind of best practice or ways to train medical students. I just know kind of anecdotally what I've seen. So many Down syndrome physicians go to medical schools, give lectures, try to, you know, educate about Down syndrome itself, but also best practices and how to deliver a diagnosis. Some Down syndrome clinics have like elective rotations. I direct one through our clinic where medical students can come and observe in our clinic and meet people with Down syndrome who work there and also interact with patients and families with Down syndrome. So I don't know that there's actually data on the best practice or a way to approach it, though. That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Santoro, you could do that.
Once you just wrap add this up. Things to your plate.
Yeah.
Add it to my list.
But the health instrument, as you're describing it, Like, I haven't done this survey, and we need to talk more about that too, if this is something I do and who does it and how and when. But it, I'm even thinking about like when my daughter, who's 14 and has Down syndrome, and what that means for her to be a healthy person as like emotionally in a space or like her. Yeah, she's just, it's so different for her as a 14-year-old in the world versus a 14-year-old without Down syndrome. And there's still like hormones and there's still all the things happening that are the same and what's what and how do you separate it? And I think the more tools and instruments we can have for this is so, so very helpful. Mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah.
Well, I would love to ask about just what, how does this roll out or have you started to roll it out and how as parents and caregivers of people with Down syndrome, can we be part of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. So far we've collected survey responses from over 500 parents and caregivers. So we're so appreciative for the community and all the folks who have filled out our survey so far. It's an online survey, so you could always email me or reach out to our Down syndrome program email address at MGH. It is a long survey because we have a lot of questions because we're really trying to look at all aspects of health. But yeah, if anyone is willing or interested, we would welcome any more responses that we could get. Thank you. Yeah.
Is there a number that you want to reach? Do you have a goal for a number of people doing the survey?
Yeah. In survey research world, it's kind of based on the number of questions and the responses you get. So we're very, very close, actually. We may be able to close the survey somewhat soon, but any last responses we'd happily take. Yep.
Okay. And then what do you do with the information? What are your hopes and dreams for this information when it comes to like policy and healthcare practices and awareness for individuals with Down syndrome?
Yeah. So from the survey responses we get, we'll look at everything and try to narrow it down and find the best questions that are the best measures of health. So there's not a lot of extra questions about asking about things that don't matter to families and people with Down syndrome. And then once we have this really kind of strong list of questions, then my hope is that we could use it for a number of things. It would start out mostly being for research. So if your son or daughter's in a clinical trial, maybe they fill this out to track their health during the research that they're participating in to make sure there definitely aren't any negative consequences, but also to see, you know, if there's anything that could improve or intervene to improve the things that matter for health. I also really want to use it in clinic where we're seeing patients and we're tracking adherence to these guidelines over time. I really want to see if we can do anything to like move the needle on what it means to be healthy and make my patients healthier. That's really kind of the wraparound reason I started this all in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Super helpful.
And do you feel like that can reach into policies as well, like in decisions that are made in the bigger term?
Yeah, I think it will depend a bit on what we find are those really narrow, important questions. But for example, there are questions about school and there are questions about mental health. And there are things where I see patients and I really see gaps in the resources that are available for some of these things. So if we come away with data showing that these are the really key things that matter the most, then it would make sense to me that that would be good evidence mm-hmm. that there should be more resources, dedicated to those areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there's potential, but we'll have to see what we find first.
Well, we'll make sure that our mm-hmm. listeners have a link in our show notes. If you are interested in participating in the survey, we'll give that to you and you can reach out mm-hmm. listeners and maybe be part of it. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Santoro, for you personally, as you've gone through this, have there been any like insights that you've gained that have just kind of been eye-opening for you?
Yeah, when we started this whole process, we started with the World Health Organization definition of health, which doesn't, you know, require the absence of disease, but health in terms of physical, mental, and social well-being. So those three like key areas within health. So that's what we started with when we were trying to write our questions and trying to decide what was important to health. We had expert panels where we had other physicians, therapists, teachers who have either patients or students with Down syndrome, and they kind of guided us on our model. And then we included focus groups and input from parents who have kids with Down syndrome, and also some focus groups of adolescents and young adults who have Down syndrome themselves as well. So I don't know that I was surprised, but I found it really interesting that kind of all three of those groups, the experts, the parents, and then the people with Down syndrome, often talked about many of the same key parts of health, and often we're like thinking of similar things when we ask them what a healthy day looks like, and that kind of thing. So I thought that was actually really nice to see, and we're really happy that we included the voices of people with Down syndrome directly. When I was looking into the literature, I was a bit surprised at how few studies actually ask, especially adolescents and young adults, their views directly.
I guess I feel like I could see how that, in a way, I can see how that can be, because I think we're just still catching up to finding the value and worth of people with Down syndrome. Not we as in us group, this group right here, but as a society as a whole. So I could see them being overlooked. I could see people with Down syndrome being overlooked for input. There needs to be major update, as we've all now value now more of their input and their voice.
And I love the just thinking about health and how you described it in the way the World Health Organization sees it as not a lack of disease. And I've never thought about that before, but that is how so much of just our culture sees health and looks at probably most likely looks at people with Down syndrome as not being healthy. I think that's such an important mind and culture shift. I really appreciate you explaining that.
We thought a lot about what model to use and how to start. And I feel, you know, glad that we did, because as we've done all this, you know, modeling and changing our questions and everything, we still have many items in our survey that are all about physical, but a lot about mental health and a lot about social health as well. So I think, again, it's just that kind of comprehensive look at health. You know, someone could have a diagnosis, but if it's well managed and it's not impacting their day-to-day life, I don't think that should count against their, you know, health score or, you know, whatever that is.
With the, you said that like the, there are that similarities of an understanding of what a healthy day looks like for experts and parents and people with Down syndrome. Can you tell us a little bit like the specifics of that? Some of the specifics?
Sure. Yeah. So some of the things that really came out across the board were things related to physical activity, diet and exercise. Those were, you know, really common themes across. But, you know, folks with Down syndrome also talked about kind of their relationships and their hobbies, you know, things they do in their day-to-day life that make them feel proud or bring them joy. All of those kind of like a little more abstract kind of concepts came across there as well. So, and everyone talked about mental health. We did a lot of this research during COVID virtually. And so mental health was really top of mind for so many of us. And that one definitely came across too.
So interesting.
Yep.
I'm going to take this survey. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. How many questions?
Yeah, so there's branching. So we tried to make it as short as we could. So if you answer yes to certain things, it'll take you to that section. If you say no, then you kind of skip out of it. So it depends on how you answer and, you know, what kinds of co-occurring conditions your son or daughter has, that kind of thing.
So cool. Mm-hmm. When do you think you'll wrap this up? How much time do we have here?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm doing this research as part of an NIH, National Institute of Health grant. So it's been a really wonderful experience for me, but I'm just starting my last year of it. So I have about a year left to collect all my data, analyze it, and start kind of sharing the results back with everyone. So as soon as possible, I'd say.
Well, we'll have to have you back on if you're willing once you have those results and like what, sure. what your findings are and then what next steps are for how we implement that into our lives and our children's lives and our Down syndrome community.
Absolutely.
Would love that.
All right. Is there anything, Dr. Santoro, that you didn't get to share yet that you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, I'd just say thanks for having me on. I really love the podcast and all of kind of the storytelling aspect you do. I had a great mentor who told me, you know, if you've seen like one person with Down syndrome, you've seen one person with Down syndrome. Mm. And so that kind of like concept of every person being unique and an individual like has really stuck with me. And I just appreciate that. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. It's time to wrap up this episode. Friends, head over to luckyfew.co, use code podcast and get 10% off all your narrative shifting gear, which you can then put that shirt on and show up to our live event, right? With your narrative shifting shirt on your back. And friends, every week I send out a newsletter, every single week, a newsletter that is really just going to make your lives better. And you can sign up to do that. And that newsletter is going to get you early access to things like these events, like the live event. So if you are a newsletter subscriber, you got early access to this event. It's going to give you early access to merchandise that comes out and so much more. Head over to heatheravis.com to sign up.
And thanks, Josh Avis, for editing this episode and Ashley Frecolosi for producing it. If you liked the episode, share it with family and friends. And don't forget to subscribe.
And you can go to theluckyfewpodcast.com for show notes and all things that we talked about today, including the survey. You're going to find it over there at theluckyfewpodcast.com and make sure you're following along on social media at theluckyfewpod.
And hey, listener, you're slaying it. We love you. We're cheering you on and we can't wait to be together next week. Bye.
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 Bye.